Welcome to My IELTS Classroom, the podcast where two English experts talk all things IELTS. I'm Shelley Cornick.
And I'm Nick Long.
And today, Nick and I answer all of your IELTS questions. Should you use linking words in speaking part two? Who actually gives you your speaking scores in the speaking exam? And what should you do if you have got problems with timing in IELTS writing? Good afternoon, Nick. How are you?
Good afternoon. Not too bad. Thank you very much. Very sleep deprived today, unfortunately, but I'm feeling all right.
What has kept you awake this time, Nicholas?
The heat, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
Yeah, very, very warm. It was weird, though, because I couldn't sleep in the bedroom. It was too hot. Windows were open. And then I went into the living room on the sofa, opened the big patio door, like the French door.
Yeah.
And when I woke up, it was absolutely freezing.
So, was it? Yeah.
So,
just, and you woke up because you were too cold.
Yeah, just a bit of a nightmare all round, really.
I'm going on my summer holiday. So my trip to New York was, we're going to say postponed, not cancelled, but I have a trip to Galway this weekend or this week. It was supposed to be 4 days, but because I'm flying to a tiny town called Knock.
Knock.
Who's there? I mean, I'm going to have to do some knock note jokes, right? Knock, knock, who's there? Me! Because it's such a tiny airport, there's not enough people for the plane home to fly,
right,
essentially. So it got cancelled. So I should have come back on Sunday, but instead I'm coming back next Thursday. So it is a much, much longer holiday than I was planning. However, but what I'm laughing at was, I was like, oh, but you know, it's good. I'm going on a summer holiday. And you know, on those Ryanair flights, you can only take a really small suitcase.
Yep.
I was thinking, oh, it'd be fine because, you know, it's summer, shorts and t-shirts. At some point yesterday, I thought, oh, I better check what the temperature's going to be. So this is the west coast of Ireland. So it's next to the Atlantic Ocean.
Rain, 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 rain.
Yeah, 17 degrees and rain every day. So suddenly, in my head, I was like, I don't need a plan. I'm just going to be outside in the sun. It's on the beach. Nope. So my new plan is just Guinness, Nick. That's what it's going to be.
Sounds like a tip-top plan.
It does, doesn't it? Exactly. So, I was in two minds about today's episode. On the one hand, I had already planned and ready to go the listening lesson that we discussed last week from Cambridge 18. That is still going to happen. However, I don't know, this week I have just received loads and loads and loads of emails with students asking me just a huge range of questions about the IELTS exam. And it sort of made me think, it's been absolutely ages since we did an IELTS Q&A. In fact, I can't remember. I mean, it's been, what, a couple of years, I reckon.
It's been a very long time, I think, since we've done a proper Q&A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I thought was, you know, if I think in the first couple of times that we did those, we looked at some of the more basic kind of questions, the sort of questions about, I don't know, the procedure of the exam, things like that.
Yeah.
What I've got today, well, to be honest, it is just a representation of the smorgasbord, the range of questions which I get sent in a week. You know, whenever anyone signs up for our newsletter, I always say, if you've got a particular problem area or if you've got any question about IELTS, email me. And people do, Nick. And on the one hand, I love it. But on the other hand, it can be a little bit overwhelming. So I thought what I would do today is we'd have a look at some of these questions just because I think the answers could be useful for everybody.
Yeah.
Also to show people, if you have got a question, you know, email us. We are always, well, I'm always willing to answer questions. All I would ask is try and keep your question as direct as possible. I had a question this week which was 800 words, Nick.
Oh, my.
I mean, that's more like a novel, really, isn't it, than a question. So try and keep them like to the point if you can, just for my mental health. Also, I try and reply to every question, you know, within 1 or 2 days, but I have to prioritize our subscribers, our students, because, you know, we always answer those questions.
Yeah.
So if you do email me at hello@myieltsclassroom.com and you don't hear an immediate answer, trust me, your question is not lost. It will be answered. It just depends on how much marking I've got that day. That's it. All right. So I haven't shown you these, Nick. I think they're quite a good mix.
Okay.
And I just thought it might be a little bit of fun. I'm in the holiday spirit. So let's share our knowledge and share the love. So, Nick, if you want, I mean, if today you could do different voices because each of these each of these letters is from a different person. But why don't you have a read of the first one?
Hello, Shelley. How are you doing?
Good.
Shelley, is it possible that a question from part two might be asked several times? You gave us a list of possible questions for part two, and my friend had the question about a recent film he was disappointed about. I mean, should I cross such questions, or is there a chance I'll be asked one of them?
So I think they mean, should I cross out
that question? Or maybe come across.
Oh, well, yes.
Maybe cross out, yeah, you're right.
Maybe cross out.
Context. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what I recently did was... and actually, I might try and send this out as a newsletter this Sunday. So if you're subscribed to our newsletter, I will make an effort to see if I can actually send one. It's been a few months. But I've spent the last few weeks, I think, when did the... So let's start from the beginning. There are two exam packs, aren't there, of questions? There's pack A and pack B. And the examiner is given one of the packs. And in each pack, there are, I don't know, how many part one questions? 12, maybe?
I'm not sure.
16.
Exactly how many.
Something like that. There are definitely in each pack 25 cue card questions. And then 25 sets of part three questions, which are connected to the cue cards. So there are two packs of questions, and those questions are rotated. Am I right? I think it's every 4 months. So I think every 4 months, one pack is retired and replaced by a new pack. So each pack, I think, is in circulation for something like 8 months. And then it gets retired. But they're alternating. So I think April and September are the times when the packs change. Something like that. So the point is that over time, because the same 25 or 50 topics at one time are being asked again and again and again. You know what students are like. They share information, don't they? They share the topics they were given. There's a great website, which is based in China, that I use to try and harvest the current exam topics. And I've recently just finished the new ones. It's taken me a month. So I've put that document, it's up in our coffee point for our subscribers, but I will try and send it out this week. Again, it's not really cheating because there are 50 topics. It would be absolutely impossible, I think, for a student to prepare or memorize.
Oh, that would be a terrible idea, wouldn't it?
Well, if you're memorizing, you're failing, essentially, right? But as we know, there are some kind of strange cue card topics, aren't there?
Yeah, sometimes there are, yeah.
I can't think of a really strange one that's in the current ones. Oh, I think there's that describe a water sport you would like to try. That card's back.
I remember one recently. I think it was maybe about a year ago. There was that describe a friend who wears strange clothes or something like that, which was a bit odd, wasn't it?
That is the example that I always use when I'm telling people be aware of strange cue cards, right? So if you can get your hands on the current cue card topics, I don't think it's cheating because there are so many of them, but it just gives you a little bit of a heads up just to think, what would you talk about for each of the cue cards, right? As I think this is Layla's questions. Layla said one of the current questions is a recent film that he was disappointed about. So a film you've seen that you were disappointed by or something like that. So I guess the question is, Nick, if her friend had that card in, I'm guessing, in her local test centre, does that mean then that she will not get that card?
Well, based on what you've just said, she's got a 1 in 50 chance of getting it.
Exactly.
2%. So it's unlikely, very unlikely that you'll get that one.
It's unlikely you'll get it, but you've got no more or less chance of getting that card again than your friend did that first time. Because I guess, I think it would be quite unusual for an examiner to use the same cue card on the same test day.
Right.
Because, you know, students could leave the exam, tell the people who are waiting. That would be unfair. But if, so, you know, if somebody comes out of the exam, one or two people in front of you and says, oh, I was asked to describe my favourite cafe. it's going to be pretty unlikely you get that particular
Very
cue
unlikely,
card.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think the examiners repeat them on the same day. However, if you're going on a new day at the new test centre, the pack begins again.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to the examiner which cue card topics they choose for you. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, there might be some that some examiners prefer, so they might use them again, or some they don't use. I don't think they're really supposed to do that. I think it should be more blind.
Mm-hmm.
But my answer is no, do not cross out that question. There is still a chance you'll be asked it, but as Nick has just said, it's a 2% chance, which is about the same chance as me going out for a run this evening. So very, very low.
And we should say as well that even if you're using the Cambridge IELTS books to prepare and to practice, a lot of the part two questions or topics that are in those books could be used in the exam today. The wording might be slightly different, but the general idea is recycled. They're all recycled, really, aren't they? Quite often, so.
Exactly. So, you know, in a way, it's often minor changes, isn't it? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a lot of questions about car journeys, for example, right? So it might be one time a difficult car journey. Then it might be a car journey when you were a child. Then it might be a long car journey.
Yeah.
It's all car journeys at the end of the day. So, yeah. So, you know, don't worry too much. The part two topics are designed for anybody to be able to talk about, really.
Mm-hmm.
So although I'm not going to lie, as you said, Nick, if some of them ask you to describe someone who wears strange clothes, but yeah, I mean, there's an element of luck, but most of the time, whatever cue card you get, you should have an equal opportunity of speaking. And that's all that matters, really, is that you are able to keep speaking, show the examiner your language.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Layla's asked a second question. So do you want to ask this one as well?
She said, also, my English teacher always tells me, Layla, use linking words. It's the second speaking part, so you must use them more. I actually use them, but rarely. And consequently, I start to blame myself. The same feeling when I remember some cool related topic words only after finishing my speech. Are they extremely important?
I do think, Nick, you should get a job as some sort of voiceover man. Very good. I particularly like the Layla. Okay, so that's interesting. So sometimes I think if I went to the reading exam tomorrow, I would do quite poorly because I get so many letters. I don't read them carefully enough. I didn't actually realise that Layla was specifically asking about speaking part two there, Nick. So what would you say? Would you say, what was her actual question? Are linking words extremely important? So why don't we do in general and in speaking part two?
Okay.
What would you say to that?
I would say linking words, if you're aiming for a 7, which Layla is,
yes.
I don't think they're that important, to be honest.
Yeah.
If you're aiming for something higher, then yes, they are important, but not every single type of linking word, I would say.
Right. So what would be sort of the things that we are looking for more than others, or what would be a good example?
I remember I think I told you this story. I had a group of students from a town in Lithuania.
Right.
And they'd all had the same teacher in the same school in Lithuania. And
every
single one of them, when we were doing part two practice and part one as well of speaking, were using things like moreover and furthermore and stuff like that, because their teacher said you must use linking words between your sentences. And they are very good examples of the wrong type of linking words, because part one and part two, it's informal questions in part one. It's an informal discussion, a speech.
Yeah.
In part two, and they are completely inappropriate. And actually, a couple of them, I said to them, look, your fluency is good enough for a 7, but because you've used these words inappropriately throughout the first and second part, that's only going to be a 6 for fluency, because you've completely destroyed, because one of the bullet points, I can't remember exactly what it says, but
I think it's like use cohesive devices.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right, Nick. So, you know, I think it depends exactly that on what you are using as linking words. In a strange way, I agree with Nick, and I would say good linking words are sort of invisible, aren't they?
They are.
So you almost don't notice them when they're used well.
Mm-hmm.
But you do notice them when, you know, a student's using them inappropriately.
Exactly.
So I would honestly say, Layla, you know, if you're focusing on telling a story, which mm-hmm. is what we tend to do in part two, and you've kind of like put that story together so it sort of flows, you're mm-hmm. probably naturally using linking expressions
mm-hmm.
anyway, even if it's simple things like, you know, and then mm-hmm. we did this and after that and mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it, you know, things I would say. You know, and then if you want to go beyond that, we did a podcast.
Comment adverbs.
Yes, and I think I have named it really badly. Right, so I didn't name it discourse markers, which would be helpful for anybody looking for it. I've named it Fluency and Coherence Explained.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the podcast episode, How Will the Examiner Score Your IELTS Speaking Fluency and Coherence?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're interested in what discourse markers are or how you can sort of link your ideas together in a more natural way
mm-hmm.
than those terrible transition signals, go and have a look at that. I've actually got the full blog post there, so you could just read it or you can listen to Nick and I demonstrate
it.
Yeah, but I think you're absolutely right, Nick. I think it depends on what you're using
mm-hmm.
and it'd be better to not have those.
It would.
Than it would to have those.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Okay, so they were Layla's questions. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of the, you know, one sort of flavour of questions
mm-hmm.
which we get. Why don't we move on to the next one?
Good evening, Shelley Cornick.
Thank you. Good evening.
Hope you are doing great.
I am.
Please, I want to verify an important information. I passed my IELTS in February 2021 and PLAB 2 this month. Can I still use the IELTS result for my GMC registration within the next 3 months? Thanks and regards, Chima.
So this is obviously a very, very different type of question, isn't yeah. it, Nick? Right. So this is, you know, this
question.
It's an admin question, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, the very, very, very basics mm-hmm. is any IELTS certificate, it doesn't matter what you're using it for,
yeah.
is valid for 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 2 years from the date you sit the exam.
Right.
So if this student took their test in February 2021.
They will need to take another test.
It's now out of date.
Yep.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So for anybody who's not a doctor, PLAB 1 and PLAB 2, they are the medical, I guess they're kind of sort of tests that you need to take if mm-hmm. you want to come and work for the NHS in the UK.
Yep.
They're basically verifying your medical knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So you need your IELTS to show your English, and then you do your PLAB 1 and your PLAB 2 to show that you actually are qualified to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
There's other sort of things some doctors need to do if they don't have any practical experience, mm-hmm. if they didn't have as part of their degree,
yeah.
they then have to come over and take part in the NHS Foundation. That means they need a 7.5 in every area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's difficult. But for IELTS, for GMC registration through PLAB, you just need a 7 mm-hmm. in every area.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I would say is to anybody who's got a question about GMC registration, honestly, I am not the best person to ask, right? I can tell you public information.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you are trying to register with any professional body, so, you know, the GMC, if you're a pharmacist, if you're a nurse, I would always contact the governing body directly mm-hmm. to ask them.
Yeah.
Now, what I do know is that although the IELTS certificate is only valid for 2 years old, and also, by the way, if you're doing PLAB, you know that we spoke, I don't know when, but you know the one skill retake?
Yeah.
They don't accept that.
Ooh.
So
that's only for nurses, right?
The nurses are allowed a lower score mm-hmm. and they can get a 6.5 in writing and they can combine.
Yeah, two different tests.
Two certificates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but for to be a doctor, you can't combine, which yep. means you therefore can't do the IELTS one take.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is something on the GMC website which says, if it says, you know, your IELTS certificate is more than 2 years old,
mm-hmm.
and then it says, if you achieved our minimum scores more than 2 years ago, and the certificate meets all of our other criteria, i.e. you got 7 in each one and a 7.5 overall,
mm-hmm.
we may consider additional evidence that demonstrates how you can prove you have kept your English skills up to date.
Mm.
So you can do this by, so you have to submit your test report on your IELTS certificate, and then you could put, give a reference from a tutor or a lecturer of a postgraduate course. So if you'd done, I don't know, some master's in some clinical, well, actually, like Noor, the student we interviewed, oh, lovely Noor. I was hopefully going to see her next week, actually, but I don't know if that's going to happen now. Anyway, she did a master's degree in cosmetic surgery, in like cosmetics, not cosmetics like makeup, but like procedures on your face for sort of like skin problems. If she then wanted to go on and do her PLAB after that, she would be able to because she'd done a master's degree. So she just needed a letter from her tutor.
Right.
Or if you've been employed by someone who is based in a country where English is the first and native language. So if you've been working in the UK or
South
in
Africa,
Australia.
New Zealand, Canada.
And you have to do that. And it says all references submitted for consideration must cover at least 3 months full-time study or employment within the last 2 years. So you can't have done, I don't know, a six-week course in something. It's got to be a minimum of three months. So, you know, like always, you can probably go directly to the websites to get this sort of information. You know, I will always answer and do my best. But what I would say is, you know, if you can email somebody and you can demonstrate in your email that you have got a high level of English and you put a nice email together and you maybe explain, you know, I did it, but there's been COVID. I wonder if there might be some flexibility. But I have no idea. The only way you will find that out is by actually contacting GMC. So, you know, this is not just for Chima. The reason I've included this one is just, yes, I can help you answer these sort of admin questions, but I don't think I'm necessarily the best person to ask. Right? I think I'm better for more teaching questions. But the next one might be something that's a little bit in the middle.
Yeah.
So why don't we have a little read of this next one?
Okay. The next one says, hey, Shelley, how are you doing?
Thanks. Good.
So I've taken my exam 2 days ago and received my score this morning. I went in without enough practice, so I'm not quite surprised with the result. However, I still am praying for a 0.5 increase in writing with EOR.
So okay. I'm going to interrupt you there, Nick. Okay. So this student is one of those students who is going for the NHS Foundation and needs a 7.5 in everything.
Right.
So they've got a 9 in listening,
wow,
an 8.5 in reading, a 7 in writing, and a 7.5 in speaking. So the only one they've missed is writing by 0.5.
So I asked around and some suggested that applying for a remark in both writing and speaking, even though I already got the required band score of 7.5, for speaking, I guess that is, would sort of grant me an increase in the lowest score of them, which is writing. Others, however, advised me to only remark writing and tell them I was expecting an 8. What would you suggest? Are you allowed to tell them what you were expecting?
I don't know. I don't think you are, because everyone, but 9. No, I don't think there's any way you can say what you, I mean, you could put that in the email that you send the test centre, but I do not think that would make any difference.
Thanks in advance from Rowan.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously it's difficult. If you're aiming for 7.5 in all bands, to get all of that on the same, is difficult, obviously. So, you know, if you're that close, I think this is actually an interesting question. So the question is, should she remark should I just remark writing or should I remark writing and speaking because speaking is higher? So then they're going to go, oh, the speaking's okay, but come on, we'll bump her up a 0.5. So let's start with that. Do you think that there's any truth in that?
No,
if you apply for 2?
No, I don't think that would be any consideration whatsoever.
No.
Yeah. If they remark your writing, I would assume that they're not even going to look at your speaking score, just look at your essay and your report.
Well, I would imagine there would be 2 examiners who would remark your writing. I still think they would do separate task 1, task 2 scores by 2 different examiners. And then someone completely different would listen to the recording of your speaking and give you a speaking mark, and they would have absolutely no idea what the other 1 or 2 examiners was doing. So in terms of your, this is a myth I had not heard before, Nick, which is why I liked it. So in terms of the myth that, you know, if you apply for a remark for everything, at least one thing will get moved. I think that's complete nonsense.
Yeah,
however,
not true whatsoever.
No, however, I actually do think that she should ask for a remark of writing and speaking, if she's going to ask for a remark at all. Can you guess why that might be?
Because it's the same price, probably.
So it's the same price, and there's no negative remarking, right?
Yeah.
So your scores can't go down. It's very expensive to ask for a remark. The remark cost varies per country. I remember someone in Canada told me it was something, honestly, it was something like $200. It was almost the same
price. Doing the
price
exam again.
As a new exam. So in this case, I would say, you know, the risk of a remark is that if your score does not get changed, you have to pay that money.
Yeah.
If it does get changed, you get a refund. I know this student. She's a very, very strong speaker. I actually think an 8 for speaking wouldn't be out of the question.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think she could definitely get an 8.
So the reason I would ask for both is you've then got two chances of the score being increased to get your refund. So
you,
you
get
know,
a refund if it does get increased.
If it gets increased, you get your money back.
I see.
Yes.
I see.
So for that reason only, I would put remark everything. I mean, the chances, I mean, a reading and listening is not going to change. But, you know, for anybody out there, even if you only need a change in one, put everything down because, I mean, really, it's only writing and speaking that are likely to change because reading and listening, the answers are black and white. But if you do that, you've given yourself at least another chance of getting that refund.
Do you, is there a sort of time limit on when you can apply for an EOR?
Oh, yeah, there is. I think it is 6 weeks after your test date.
Okay, so it's quite a long time after. I've got another suggestion.
Yeah.
Because I know Rowan's in the UK.
Yes.
So she should apply for a breakdown of results.
Yeah.
Because that's in the data protection in the UK, isn't it? They're allowed, they have to do that by law. And then I would have a look at how you did in each of the bands in task one and task two. And if there is a 6 anywhere, which there may be, think about what that might be. Because that would suggest that there is a fundamental error with either your report or your essay, and it might not be worth applying for an EOR and wasting that money and instead using it to take the exam again.
I think that's a really, really good suggestion, particularly if you've got, I don't know, let's say that you get it back in your report, you've got a 5 for task achievement. You've probably missed something in that question. You didn't understand the chart. You might have thought you did. Something, I think you're absolutely right, Nick. So, you know, if everything comes back 7777777, that probably shows everything's pretty good and has a chance of going up.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely right there. So, yeah, so that, what we're talking about now is not, so the EOR is what you apply for like the, if, when you're saying, hey, I want another examiner to look at this. That's why you have to pay, because somebody, it's now somebody's job to remark. If you apply for the breakdown of results, go to our website, go to the blog. General advice, you'll see it's a black, it's got a black thumbnail with a little pie chart, breakdown of results. That's something you can apply for, which, as Nick said, it's a loophole in the privacy laws, the internet privacy laws, where they are legally obliged to tell you the scores in the individual things. So it's not going to change, nothing's going to change.
But you'll see what you got exactly.
Yeah. And then you'll know, is it worth spending that money? Or do you just want to save it?
And do it again.
And do it again. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, cool. All right, Nick. Let's do the next question.
Okay. This is from Yusuf, right?
Yeah.
So he says, I write very good essays for the task two question. I constantly score 7. But the problem is that I usually overtake the recommended time, which is 40 minutes. I usually take 42 to 47 minutes. So I leave very short time for the report. For the report question, that is why when I submit my task to be evaluated, I usually find that my report estimated score is 6.5, not 7, like my essay. My IELTS exam is in less than 2 weeks, so I want your advice whether you recommend that I start writing the report so that I guarantee that it will be a band 7 level and then I move to the essay, or should I do the opposite? My goal is to score a 7 in writing. That's why I'm asking this question, because I know that to guarantee a band 7 in writing, you should guarantee that your score is a 7 in both of the tasks. because no one knows how the writing score is marked, as you mentioned in your free ebook.
Well done, Yosef. I'm always like, oh yeah, I wrote an ebook. I sometimes forget about that. Right, so now this is the shortened version of Yosef's question, which was
this was the
800
word one, yeah?
This was the 800 word question. But I mean, it is a useful question, isn't it?
It really is.
I guess it is. Mm-hmm. If you know that your report is not as good because
you spent too much
don't
time
quite
on
have
answer.
Enough time on, mm-hmm. yeah, for it, what should you do? Should you switch to the report? Mm-hmm. Should you stick? I mean, what would you say, Nick?
Well, I would say you got 2 weeks. So mm-hmm. you want to practice writing an essay in 40 minutes 3 or 4 times.
That's what I think.
Yeah. So that you don't go over in the exam. Because if you do, you're not going to have time to write the report.
Yeah. I mean, if Yosef was getting a 7.5 or an 8 for his mm-hmm. essay, mm-hmm. I would say, well, don't worry about the 6.5. Because even though we don't actually know how the scores are combined,
the essay is worth more, isn't it? Definitely.
It's worth 2/3. So if you were getting 7.5 your essay and 6.5 your report, you're going to get the 7 that you need. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Because you do need a 7, I actually still think probably if you're getting a 7 and a 6.5, you are very, very likely
to get a 7 overall.
To get a 7 overall, yeah. Mm. But I'm just using that based on my experience and my intuition and my feeling. There is no official, mm-hmm. you know, statement that that is the case. So what I would say is, unfortunately, to get a 7 in both, you have to be able to write both to a 7. And if you think that the issue with your report is just because you don't have enough time. It's not because you're not spotting the key features or you're not summarizing mm-hmm. or comparing. If you just think it's because you don't have enough time, mm-hmm. then my answer to this was you need to make sure that you have enough time. Mm-hmm. Because I actually think, you know, if Yosef switched to starting with the report mm-hmm. and took more time and then he didn't finish
the essay
mm-hmm. and got, you know, a 6.5 for the essay and a 7 for the report mm-hmm. has got much less chance of getting a 7 overall mm-hmm. than a 7 for the essay and a 6.5 for the report. So mm-hmm. I think you're doing the right thing, mm-hmm. but you know, 42 to 47 minutes, that's quite a big difference in time, yeah. isn't it? Like that's yeah. 5 minutes is a lot. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple of students that I'm working with at the minute who I'm trying to sort of, you know, teach. I think that, you know, as a teacher, the first thing you want people to be able to do is whatever you're teaching, you want them to be able to do it correctly, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to know that, you know, if you're teaching swimming, the person can actually swim, right? If we're trying to teach students to get to a band 7, I want to make sure they can actually write an essay that is a band 7, right? They've got the idea and the feeling of how to structure it, how to argue correctly, how to do all of those things. And then once they can do it, once we know you can do it, then you can start speeding up and doing it more quickly. I think Yosef is at that stage. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what he needs to do now is, if you know that you're getting a 7, you know what to do, you've got to be able to do that in the time limit. It might mean you reduce your arguments a little bit. You leave a sentence out of a body paragraph, which doesn't actually add much value.
Or spend more time planning so that you spend less time actually writing the essay.
Yeah. You need to experiment. I mm-hmm. think ages ago, God, I mean, 3 years ago, it might even just be a blog post. I wrote something about, you know, how to consider your timing. You know, next time you write an essay, it's great that you're saying 42 to 47 minutes, but how are you spending those minutes? Mm-hmm. Write down, you know, how long did it take you to, you know, generate your ideas? How long did it take you to write the introduction, the body paragraphs, the conclusion? Is it obvious when you write those times down where you are spending the extra time? Mm-hmm. If it's the introduction, introductions aren't that valuable, right? So just get, you know, an okay on-topic opening sentence. It's not poetry. Just get it down and keep going, because you don't want to be wasting time there, because you're not really going to get a 7 for your introduction. Mm-hmm. As long as you've made the main purpose of the essay clear, the examiner knows what the question is, what your opinion is, mm-hmm. boom, get onto the body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get onto the body.
get onto the body. Right. Well, with that said, Nick, get onto the body. I think I need to get onto my dinner. So I think we've only done half of the questions that I've been sent this week. So what would you say if we paused now and came back and did the rest next week?
That would sound perfect. Double dipping advice.
Double dipping, yes, Q&A. Q&A squared. So if you have a question, email me. Okay, whatever it is, I will always answer. I won't necessarily put it on a podcast, but I will give you an answer. It's always better to ask than sit at home, you know, feeling worried or stressed that you're not sure how something works or if you've got the right information. There is a lot of poor information out there.
There is.
And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a subscriber, whoever you are, we just want to help people avoid that. Okay. So don't be afraid. hello@myieltsclassroom.com. Send us an email. And yeah, I will always get back to you. So let's pause here, Nick, and then we will come back next week with part two. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
My IELTS Classroom podcast is a production of My IELTS Classroom Limited. Nick and I do not represent IELTS, and everything you heard in this episode is our own personal opinion. You can find the show notes and transcript for this episode on our blog. That's blog.myieltsclassroom.com. And if you're looking for our video courses, speaking lessons, and marking service, you can find that at www.myieltsclassroom.com. If you have a question or query or just want to chat, you can email Nick and I at hello@myieltsclassroom.com. Our theme music is by Heartbeat and our artwork is produced by David Brown. Have a great week, study hard, and remember, this is my IELTS Classroom. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.